Vedanta teacher James Schwartz on Bhagavad Gita. An audio workshop brought to you by meinyogalehrer.de, recorded in Yoga Vidya Westerwald Ashram in Germany on March 2013. Part 1 of 13.
Om Brahmanandam Paramasukhidam Kevalam Yanamurtim Dvandvatitam Gangadasadrisham Tattvamasyadilaksham Ekam Nityam Vimalamachalam Sarvadi Sachibhutam Bhavatitam Trigunarahitam Sadgurum Tam Namami Narayanam Padmabhavam Vishishtam Shaktim Chitat Putra Parasarancha Vyasam Sukham Gaurapadam Mahantam Govinda Yogendra Matasya Shisham Sri Shankaracharya Matasya Padmaha Padam Chahastam Alakancha Shisham Tam Totikam Vartika Karamanyan Asmad Gurum Chantatam Anatoshmihi Vishwam Darpana Drishya Maninagari Tulyam Nijan Targetam Pasyanat Manimayaya Bhaivaribod Bhutam Yata Nidraya Yasakshat Kurute Prabodha Samaye Svatmanameva Dvayam Tasmai Shri Gurumurtaye Namaidam Shri Dakshinamurtaye Namaha Om Govinda, Krishna, Narayana, Paramatmane. Okay, here's the situation. There's a man, his name's Arjuna, and he has a problem. He's the leader of an army that's about to fight a civil war. And he has for his charioteer, this is a long time ago this happened, he has the one who's driving his chariot, an enlightened person named Krishna. Krishna's the teacher. Krishna represents Vedanta. It's out of Krishna's mouth that the science of Vedanta, science of self-knowledge, is going to come. And Arjuna has chosen Krishna in a very strange way. The person on the other side who's leading the opposing army is named Duryodhana. Duryodhana means a hard person. He is a very difficult person. He's that part of ourself that is hard and cold and unemotional, and angry, and selfish. He's that part. And Arjuna is that spiritual part of ourself that's open and following, doing the right thing. Duryodhana is a man who will do anything to get what he wants. And he has cheated Arjuna and his friends and caused this war to happen by his unethical or adharmic behavior. And both of them have big armies, but they both want to win the war. And they go to Krishna. Krishna happens to be a king who lived next to their country, who was the most powerful army and the most powerful kingdom in India at that time. And they went to ask him if he would fight with them, because they knew that if they had Krishna and his army on their side, whoever had that would probably win the war. And so they went to Krishna and they said, "Will you fight with me?" Both of them went together. And Krishna said to them, one of you can have my army, and one of you can have me. That's what he said. And he said, come back tomorrow afternoon, and you can choose. After my nap. Krishna was taking a nap, and when he woke up, just then, Arjuna and Duryodhana came in the room, and Arjuna went to the feet of Krishna, and Duryodhana stood by his head. So when Krishna was sleeping, he woke up, and the first thing he saw, he couldn't see Duryodhana because he was standing here, he saw Arjuna. So he said to Arjuna, since I saw you first, you can have first choice. Now what do you think that Duryodhana was thinking? What did Duryodhana think Krishna, that Arjuna would choose?
The army.
It's natural, isn't it? They're having a war. There's a big, powerful army, the most powerful army. And on Duryodhana's mind, it just went blank, sank. He just felt miserable. He thought, oh my God, all is lost. Arjuna is going to choose the army. What use is having one man named Krishna on your side when you can have the whole army on your side? What is the use? So he felt terrible. And Krishna said, okay, Arjuna, what do you want? And Arjuna said, I choose you, Krishna. Now that's a strange choice, isn't it? Huh? Considering a war. If you look at the situation, why would Arjuna choose Krishna? Because in every life situation, there is a factor that is unknown to us. There's always an unknown factor in every life situation. In everything you're doing in life, you want to get a certain result, isn't it? You have your fears, you have your desires, and you want things to turn out or to happen in a certain way. And you can't always tell how things are going to happen, whether you'll get what you want or not, whether you'll get a good job, whether the man or woman will love you, whether your mother or father will die early. We don't know. Nobody knows. It's a mystery what will happen, isn't it? But things always do happen. And the things that are happening are controlled by a mysterious power or force which is beyond our own knowledge. It's called Devam. It means the divine or the unknown. And Arjuna has a feeling. He has a spiritual feeling. He feels that there is some other factor other than just man and material and skill and warfare and time and place and circumstances. He has a feeling that there is something else, and that Krishna represents that force or that factor for him. He says, I choose you. And Duryodhana is happy. Huh? That materialist part of him, of you, huh? You know that materialist, fearful, angry, desiring part? We talked about it last night as the desirer, the fearing. That person is very happy. Now he's got the army. Now he's going to win. Huh? That part that always wants to win, that gets what you want. So this is the war that's going on here between these two parts of ourselves. The spiritual part and the what? The worldly material part. And what happens The battlefield has been set up. Our Duryodhana's army is on one side. Arjuna's army is on the other. Krishna's driving Arjuna's chariot. Chariot represents your body, your life. As it goes on the path, the chariot is what? The vehicle of your life that moves you through life. And Krishna has the reins. He's controlling the horses. There are five horses which represent the five senses. And Krishna's always in front of Arjuna, because to drive he has to be in front, and Arjuna's in back, and he stands up above, looking out, making decisions how to fight this war. But he always can see Krishna in front of him. Means what? He has this thought of himself, of this higher force, or this higher factor, in his mind all the time while he is engaged in the battle of life. See the symbolism? It's all set up. You want this knowledge of who you are in front of you, in your mind, in front of you all the time. Because this knowledge of who I am is going to solve all the problems that come up in life. Now, they beat the drums of war. Everybody's ready to go. And in those days, war was like a big football match. Everybody came. The children came, the parents came, the grandpeople came. They put tents up. People slept there. It was like a big thing. They had medical people. They had food service, everything. It was like a big, and they had a big field, like a big football field, where the warriors fought with each other. And they fought to the death. It was a matter of life and death. It wasn't like these wars nowadays where these men sit and look on a TV screen and kill people 10,000 miles away. It was like serious physical combat. And Arjuna said, and they beat the drums, and so everything got silent. And Arjuna said, Krishna, drive me out into the middle of the battlefield so I can see the army and see how they're set up and see who's leading and who's controlling and what the formations are. I need to get some knowledge here to plan my strategy. And so Krishna drove the chariot out in front, in the middle. And everybody's watching. There's thousands and thousands of people all watching. And Arjuna looked on the other side, and the first thing that he saw was his guru. Not good. He loved his guru. And his guru was leading the other army. The guru taught him everything that he knew. The guru knew every trick, every mantra, every weapon that Arjuna had been taught to him by the guru. And the guru was a great man. He was an honest man, and he followed Dharma. He did what was right. He didn't want to be on that side. He didn't want to lead that army. But it was his duty to do so, and he was going to do his duty if it meant killing his disciple. And Arjuna was his favorite disciple. He was not emotional. He just said, karma and dharma had put me here. It is my job as a warrior to lead these people. It's my job to fight this war, and I will do the job. And Arjuna saw his guru there, he saw cousins, he saw friends, he saw all relatives, various people. He knew many of the people there on that battlefield that were going to fight with him. And they all liked him, basically. There was one or two who had a grudge. He also saw some people who didn't like him. There was one great warrior named Karna who had vowed to kill Arjuna. He had an emotional, personal issue, and he wanted to pay Arjuna back. But basically, he liked everybody there, and everybody respected him. And he sat there and he thought for a few minutes, and suddenly he just got emotional. He got totally emotional, and he said, "I cannot do this. I can't do it." And he put down his bow and he said, "I will not fight." So that's where the story starts. That's where the teaching starts. It starts in chapter 2, verse 1. To Arjuna, who was overwhelmed by compassion, distressed and tearful, Krishna spoke these words. To behave like this is not becoming for a righteous man. It does not enhance your reputation, nor does it lead to heaven. A successful warrior does not give in to unmanliness. It does not benefit you. Overcome this emotional state, get up and fight. Wow. Whew. What kind of a guru is that? Huh? Here's this man, he's sympathetic, he loves his guru, he loves all these people, and his guru now, his spiritual guru, is now telling him what? You're a coward. You're a pussy. You're a wuss. Get up. You useless baby, get up and fight. You're a man. What are you doing here? This isn't right for you. That's a hard one for us to understand, isn't it? Because we're all passive. Well, particularly in Germany, you're all, you know, you had a big war and everybody's anti-war now. So, because we're very sympathetic with everybody, they don't want to kill anybody. And Krishna's telling him, get up and do your job. That's his job. He's been trained to do this. That's what he does. The reason he's leading this war is because the reason he's a general is because he's been trained. He's the best one to do it. By his own efforts and his own karma, he has come to this place in life. And that's what he's supposed to do, and he doesn't want to do it. He's emotional. He has an emotional breakdown. This happens to us all the time, doesn't it? Life, huh? All the time. Everybody has these problems. This is a universal problem. Life seems too big, too overwhelming. And I just want to I can't do it. I get emotional, I get depressed, I get angry, something happens, and I can't function. This is the situation that we are confronted with daily in life. Again, it's just a symbol here. He's not really being asked to kill anybody. Remember, this is just a story. It's not really about killing people. It's really funny because recently a court in Siberia, Russia, outlawed the Bhagavad Gita because they said it promotes violence. Can you imagine? Huh? Arjuna replied. So Arjuna's going to talk now. Krishna says, get up, come on, fight. You can't behave like this. Arjuna replied, O destroyer of demons. The demons are the ego. The demon, that word Duryodhana, the guy on the other side, that's your ego. And Krishna is going to destroy that demon also. By using Arjuna as a vehicle, he will destroy Duryodhana. Because that's what we're going to kill here. But it takes time, and you got to do it the right way. So he's addressing Krishna as a destroyer of demons. Means what? This knowledge destroys that sense of separateness and incompleteness and inadequacy and smallness that we all suffer. This knowledge destroys that. That's what it means. How can I fight against these men who are worthy of worship? It would be better for me to beg for food than to kill these exalted men who taught me everything I know. Arjuna's not the type to be begging for food. He's a prince. It'd be like the president of Germany going out on the street and begging for food. It's like that. He's not about to beg for food. He says it would be better to beg for food, which would be the lowest status, and Arjuna's got the highest status, right, than to kill these brave men facing us. He respects their bravery because he knows many are going to die at his hands. These are brave people. And these exalted men who taught me everything I know. He learned the art of war from these men. He's going to have to fight. Whatever wealth and pleasure I will gain from this war would be stained with blood. It is impossible to tell whether it is better if we should conquer them or they should conquer us. What's best? What's the difference? If they kill us or we kill them, what's the difference? It's just a big mess here. There's no happy ending here. There's no happy solution here. This is how you see it when your mind is emotional. You cannot figure your way out of the problem. How can we continue to live once we have slain these brave men facing us? Even if I were to obtain an unrivaled and prosperous kingdom by winning this war, I do not see anything that will take away this pain that disturbs my senses. He feels so much pain just thinking about what he has to do. Don't you have this all the time? We have this. How painful it is to contemplate what is going to happen and how we don't want to do this. So many times, just even small things every day. We're not talking big things like killing people, but every day there are certain things that are required of us to do, and it's painful for us to do them. We don't want to do them. It's not that there's anything right or wrong about them. It's just that we have this dislike and we don't want to do them. And so we know we should do them. We're supposed to do them. Reality is asking us to do these things, but I don't want to do it. It's painful. You are right. He said, you're right. Even though he's emotional, he's got enough clarity. Usually when somebody says, you pussy, get up. I'm not that way. No, you're angry. No, I'm not angry. But Arjuna, he's got this detachment. He has this dispassion that allows him to look at his emotions and honestly express what he sees there in himself. He said, you're right. I am emotional. I am confused. That's the first stage in solving a problem, is to get out of the denial phase. He's not in denial about his emotional situation. He's open to it. He wants to hear what the solution is. Usually when we have a problem, we just say it's not there. We'll see when we get to the talks on Rajas and Tamas and Maya how that is, and how it's just natural immediately to deny things. It's just so natural. Because there's this tamasic, this dull, ignorant part of ourself that doesn't want to face the truth. about ourselves or about the world. We don't want to, so we hide it. We push it. No, don't tell me. It's not like that. No, you're the problem. Then we project the problem outside on other people. In a relationship, you see that, don't you? Huh? There's some uncomfortable thing and you're doing something that isn't right, and your boyfriend or your girlfriend tells you, and what do? You say, that's not true. It's you doing it. I said, it was you who did it. Isn't it? Every time. You don't want to say, yes, I am emotional. Yes, I made a mistake. Yes, I am confused. Please help me. You don't say that. You say, no, it's your problem. That's called projection. The first is called denial, and the second is called projection. Then you throw the problem outside on someone else. So you don't have to face yourself. Look at yourself. It's your problem. He said, you are right. I am emotional and confused now. Here's a beautiful, beautiful thing that happens in this text. Just so beautiful. He said, I am your student. I take refuge in you. Tell me what I should do. He realizes that this problem is over his head. He's going to have to get some more information, more knowledge from somewhere to solve this problem, because he doesn't have any way to get out of it. Just more emotions and doing things to hide the emotions or fix the emotions is not going to work. We have all these clever little techniques and strategies for managing our emotions. But we're not talking about managing our emotions and making them okay and just getting to feel good. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about finding what the cause of our emotional problems are and going to the root of those problems. And he knows he can't do it. You know, you go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, they have done studies on the psychiatrist and the psychologist. Their emotional health is no better than the emotional health of the general population that they're treating. You go to the shrink, huh? The shrink should be going to a shrink. But whatever shrink goes to, they're all screwed up. They're all in the same emotional mess. That's why they went into psychiatry and psychology in the first place, because they were emotional and didn't know how to handle their emotions. And they didn't learn either. Because all they wanted to do is put a little Band-Aid on the cut and hope it goes away. Put a little medicine on and hope it goes away. They don't want to get down deep and deal with the problem deal with the issue that is causing this emotional disturbance. Tell me, and so he surrenders to his guru. He doesn't really know what he's going to hear now. But he loves this man Krishna. He trusts him. And he knows, he doesn't even know he's enlightened. Do you know that? He doesn't think, oh, this guy's an enlightened person. It's not like that. He heard stories. Arjuna had heard stories about Krishna, because there were things going around. This guy is, he's a rishi, he's a sage. There's something about him that's special. I mean, they say he's an incarnation. They were talking like that, of Vishnu and various things. They were talking like that. And Arjuna heard these stories, but he didn't, just discounted them. He didn't know. And Krishna never tried to tell him anything. In our tradition, we don't try to teach you anything unless you ask. We're not like out to save the world and fix people. We're not going to do that. That's the wrong way to go. So what happens here? So Krishna's kept his mouth shut. He's just been a friend to Arjuna. They've done things together. They've met socially. They like each other. And Arjuna just loves him as a friend. We love a friend. And he says, help me, I don't know. He's got this spiritual hunger inside him. And that's caused what? Ishwara or God to put Krishna there to answer his question and give him what he really needs. He doesn't know that. So he's just innocent and open and pure, and he surrenders. The idea is what? You can't solve your own stuff, your own spiritual problem. You need help. Okay. Tell me what I should do. Then the great warrior said, I shall not fight, and fell silent. He just said, okay, you tell me. Where are you? Oh, threw away the wrong one. Standing between the two armies, Krishna, as if smiling, replied, why is he smiling? Why? He's not laughing, but he's been through this before. He knows what the problem is. And he understands what Arjuna is going through and what he's going to have to go through and what the outcome will be. He understands all these things. And it just brings a little smile to his face. And he's happy to see that his friend is asking him the right questions. It's a beautiful moment. It's a very, very poignant moment when you meet your teacher. And your teacher understands what your problem is. And you actually ask, can you help me? And you're ready to hear what is being said. You're not just asking to make impress him or to whatever him or her. You actually want to know. And then the teaching can begin. Krishna replied, boy, this is a hard one now. The wise grieve neither for the dead nor for the living. Oh, excuse me. What is he talking about? There's only two categories in existence, aren't there? Dead things and living things. That's it, isn't it? The things are either dead or they're alive. The living beings are called jivas, and all the rest is just matter. This is dead. We're alive. This is dead. Our bodies are dead, but we're alive. Even body's not alive. It just looks like it's alive because we're in the body shining. We're alive, but it's dead. So there's only two things there are in all of existence, are living beings and dead things. And Krishna says what? People who are wise, intelligent people, they don't get upset on account of either one. What? Huh? That's a weird thing. What? He's going to have to explain why. That's a difficult statement, isn't it? What does that mean? There's no cause for grief on any account. There's no reason in this world why you should be unhappy.
Was
no reason.
Grief?
Sorgen machen heißt es in der Übersetzung, die ich kenne. Sonst ich weder Sorgen um die Lebenden noch um die Toten.
Okay. No reason to be unhappy. Not because things are dead or because things are alive. If people die or if people are alive, what's the difference, you see? That's a weird vision, isn't it? That's a very strange vision. And then he's going to explain himself now. He's going to teach Arjuna what this means. There never was a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. Nor will any of us cease to exist in the future. Because those who live in a body experience birth, childhood, youth, old age, and the gaining of another body, it is foolish to grieve. Sense contacts give rise to ever-changing sensations of heat and cold, pleasure and pain. You have no choice but to experience them. Only a respectable person, unaffected by pleasure and pain, is fit for liberation. Wow, that's power-packed, huh? There's a lot to think about in this statement, isn't it? There was never a time that I did not exist, nor you. Excuse me, what are you talking about? I was born and I die. I'm going to die. Before such and such a day, in my case, February 2nd, 1941, I didn't exist. And I'm 72 years old. I will definitely be dead in a few years. And you're telling me that there was never a time when I don't exist? Who are you talking to here, sir? See these two ideas here? We've got one person who thinks he's born and dies, and this other person says, I never was born and I never will die. So how are we going to get these two ideas together? How are we going to understand what this man means? Who's he talking to here? Is he talking to me? Or is he talking to me? Who am I? The idea. And nobody's going to die either. Who's worried about death? Nobody's going to die. That's a different vision, isn't it? It's a very different vision. He said, you're just gotten yourself confused because of your feelings. You're not clear about who you are because of your feelings. He says, you don't have any choice but to experience what your feelings are, but you're not meant to like identify with those feelings. So for Vedanta to work for you, for this knowledge to work for you, what is it saying? You need to be objective about your feelings. We're not saying you don't have your feelings. It's natural to have your feelings. Your emotions, your feelings, your sensations, your thoughts, all of that is natural. You don't have any control over that. But how you relate to your feelings and your emotions and your sensations that appear in your body and so forth and so on, right? It determines whether or not you're qualified for enlightenment, for freedom. See, this is a Vedanta for people at the end of their spiritual journey. These are people who want to be free of the people that they think they are, of the person that they think they are. And they need to be qualified. You can't just come in off the street with a lot of emotional problems or it's not going to work. So and you're going to see here what happens now. It's very interesting what happens in this story. Krishna is saying you have to be what? Qualified. He said, who's unaffected by pleasure and pain, those people are fit for liberation. Ooh. What? And then he gives the teaching. What is unreal does not exist. What is real never ceases to exist. What is unreal doesn't exist. What is real never ceases to exist. This is the knowledge that will set you free. Now, what does real mean? What does real mean? What does that word mean? If I feel a feeling, is that feeling real? What do you think?
No.
No. But what? It feels real, doesn't it? Real means what's permanent. Real means what doesn't change. Okay? There's a part of you that it is you, but right now let's just say there's a part of you that doesn't change.
But when you say it's not real, but it's existing.
It's existing, absolutely. It does, huh?
And it's painful.
And it's painful. Pain exists. It's not real, but it exists. And pain, isn't it? If it's real, if pain is real, you'll feel only pain, isn't it? You will never stop feeling pain. Pain will always be present, and there's no way you can get rid of it because it's permanent. It's unchanging. It's just pain. But that's not the truth about pain at all, is it? And pleasure is not real either, is it? Feeling good. We all want to feel good, don't we? But our feel goods, all the feel good things we do to make us feel good, that's not real either, is it? Why? Because it doesn't last. As soon as the karma from the action that's produced the pleasure is burned up, then what? The feel good goes away. So, if I'm basing my life, if my life is based upon how I feel, am I going to be a stable, healthy, happy person? No, I am not. Then Arjuna's just going by his feelings here. He's allowing his feelings to tell him what to do. Because he has identified himself with his feelings. He's confused himself with his feelings. And the self is that part of you that doesn't change. Now this self that we're talking about is not somewhere else. You're not going to get it. You're not going to go somewhere else to get it. It's not something that's going to happen to you later on in the form of an experience. This self that doesn't change is just that part of you that's aware. Right now, you're aware, isn't it? Is there anybody that's not aware? Good. It's obvious, isn't it, that you're aware? And this self is not what you're aware of. It's the awareness of what you're aware of. In the same awareness that's listening to these words now is the same you, the same awareness that was watching you as a little baby. You were aware when you were a baby, right? Isn't that right? Of course you were. And what? It's that same awareness that will watch you when your body grows old and gray and wrinkled and dies. That's the part that doesn't change. That's what we call reality, the real. That's real, permanent. Understand? Permanence is not something you're going to get. This self that we're looking for is not a state, a samadhi state, or an experience that we're going to get. If you get a samadhi state, if you get a high ecstatic samadhi state, and you're blissful and all that, and your mind is still, the self is that part of you that watches, observes the state. And when the samadhi state is gone, the self is what? They're watching your mind go back to the normal state. It's that part of you that's beyond experience. Beyond experience means what? Doesn't change when objects change. What all the objects, all the things in your life are constantly changing, isn't that right? But you never change. You what? You look, when something happens to you, do you come into existence when that thing happens? Are you born when the thing happens? And then when the thing dies, do you die? An experience, any experience. No. Say you fall in love. Let's say that. Let's take an example. Aren't you there before you fell in love? Yes. Aren't you there while you're in love? Yes. And aren't you there when you fall out of love? Yes, because you say, I fell out of love, right? Which means what? You didn't fall in love, and you didn't fall out of love. Did you? Huh? You were the one that watched, the body, mind, emotions, what? Fall, go through these changes called in love. So he's helping to Arjuna to discriminate, to separate his self from his ego, his experiencing person, from the objects appearing in the self. There's only two categories in existence: awareness and objects appearing in awareness. That's all. That's all there is. Me, awareness. And with me, you can say me. Me means you. Awareness, me, and objects, i.e. experiences, appearing in me. Experiences present themselves to me. They live and they die. That creative part that causes them to come is called Brahma. That part that maintains the experience is called Vishnu. And Shiva is the one that destroys that experience. But I don't come into being or go out of being. I simply observe all my experience. And this experiencing entity that I think I am, this person, is not me. It's observed by me, isn't it? This is how you can talk so clearly about yourself. That's not yourself that you're calling yourself. But you talk very clearly. You say, and then I did this, and then I did that, and then I went here, and then I lost my job, and then my boyfriend beat me, and then the police came, and then, and you tell the whole story, huh? All the things that happened. Then I got depressed, and then I met somebody, and then I fell in love. And you just talk all day long about all the things, and you can talk about yourself for 50 years, 80 years, watching yourself what? Go through all of these funny changes. Huh? Isn't it? Think about it. That person you think you are is not who you are. That emotional change, yes,
And it has this ordinary awareness, it's constant samadhi.
That's correct. Samadhi means it is, ordinary awareness is samadhi. Samadhi means samadhi. Sama means equal, di means understanding or knowledge. It means from awareness's point of view, you understand that everything is equal.
So the speech of higher consciousness, highest consciousness is meaningless.
It's meaningless. There's no higher or lower consciousness at all. There's only awareness appearing as what? The subject me and the objects presenting themselves to me. Now this is what Arjuna, Krishna is trying to teach Arjuna at this point. Okay? And he said, know that to be indestructible which pervades this entire universe. What is it that pervades everything? Pervades means is always there. Is always present. Me. Awareness. It's there, whatever happens, it's there. No one can destroy that. So if you're worried about destroying those people, you got it wrong. You're not going to be destroying those people because they're not real. They don't. Who they really are is yourself, is the self, and nothing can destroy that. So why are you worried about this problem? The self, which is not an object of knowledge. Ooh. See, we give the whole teaching first, big teaching. If you get this, you're finished. You can say bye-bye, and we'll give your money back.
If one gets it, we will do it. Money back.
Yeah, that's no, because this is a lot to take in, isn't it? This is a lot to take in that you aren't born and you aren't born and you don't die. It's something to understand. He said the self, awareness, simple, ordinary, everyday awareness. Remember, we don't want to put that awareness, nirvi kalpa samadhi. Oh, I want salvi kalpa samadhi. Oh, I want sahaja samadhi. Then what? We've made awareness what? Some rarefied spiritual experience that's somewhere else. Something that's not obtainable, something that's not experienceable, not knowable right here now. We've pushed it away. Well, this self is always pervading, always present. He said, it pervades everything. And then he said, the self, awareness, you, are not an object of knowledge. What does that mean? That means you can't take yourself and turn it into an object that you can know. How can you do that? Know means experience. Experience and know mean the same thing. You can't turn yourself into an object that you can experience. Why? Because there's only one self, and you're always experiencing yourself all the time. Aren't you? When are you not experiencing yourself? Anytime? I know that somebody's going to say, when I'm asleep. Right? We'll get to that sleep business later on. No, you're there while you're sleeping, aren't you? Your body and mind are what? Your body is, who knows where it is when you're asleep. It's just wherever it is. And your mind and your personality, that's gone, isn't it? When you're asleep. But you're not gone, are you? The person that you think you are is not there in deep sleep, but you're there. Definitely there. You enjoy your sleep. If what? If somebody turns on a radio and wakes you up, you're not happy, are you? Well, if you're, huh? If you're not there, then tell me why you're not happy. Because if you're not there, you wouldn't even care if you woke up or not, would you? But you're definitely there. You're experiencing yourself there. You haven't gone away at all. You're getting bliss and limitlessness. You're feeling limitless and blissful. You feel good. You're in touch with yourself, experiencing yourself as yourself in that state. Without objects. So this self that we want to know is not something that you can know as an object or gain as an object. Let me see here, get my glasses. It's indestructible even though it lives in dying bodies. These bodies are dying. You know that. Huh? You know that. Does anybody doubt that? No. And yet this self lives in them, what? Without changing. Anyone who thinks that the self kills or that it can be killed does not know the truth. It is not born, so how can it die? It is ever present and not subject to time. When the body dies, it does not die. How can you say that you are a killer if you know the self as it is? Just as a person changes old clothes for new, the indweller, means the self, gives up its old body for a new one. Weapons cannot destroy the self. Fire can't burn it, nor can water wet it. The wind cannot dry it. It is changeless, all-pervading, immovable, and eternal. Knowing that it is not an object of thought and not subject to change, you should not grieve. Even, he's going to give him another argument now, because he can see by looking at Arjuna. Arjuna's got a big question mark. What in the hell are you talking about here, sir? Huh? That's what, huh? What is this man talking about? I mean, this sounds pretty weird, doesn't it? When you look at it from the point of view, I'm just a regular person. Right? That's a lot to take on board for a person, isn't it? Yeah, that's a lot. Now, as spiritual people, it's not so bad. We got an appreciation of that. But if I was to go out on the street here and start talking like that to people, huh? They're going to call the little man with white coats. Huh? Isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. They're going to say, this man, you know, needs some medication. Now, he's going to give another argument. Even if you see the self caught in a constant cycle of births and deaths, you should not grieve, because what is born dies, and what dies is reborn. It is foolish to worry about what cannot be changed. In this world, where everything is changing, everything is born and dies and is reborn again. It's eternal also. All the meat here that is, makes up this body, where did it come from? From the earth. How far away from the earth is this body? It's still the earth. It's just the earth in this form. And when I leave this body, when I am finished with this body, when it's worn out, this body's like a suit of clothing. When my jacket gets finished, I throw it away and I get a new jacket. When this body has done its service, I throw it away and I get a new body. Where does this body go? Right back to where it came from. And somebody else, what, takes all those chemicals and makes a body out of it for them. So the body is eternal. It just morphs, changes from one form to another, back and forth. Comes into existence and goes out of existence, comes back in and goes out of existence. All beings are unmanifest in the beginning, become manifest in the middle of their life cycles, and return to the unmanifest condition in the end. What's there to grieve about, Arjuna? So on account of anything here in this world, there's no reason to grieve, because it's an eternal process. And on account of awareness, there's no reason to grieve either, because it's eternal and unchanging. So nothing's actually going on here, is it? Nothing's actually happening here, is it? So what am I so worried about? Just tell me, like that. What are you so worried about? What's going on here, fella? Take it easy. Relax.
Thank you for listening. For more information about Vedanta, yoga and self-inquiry, visit shiningworld.com, yogavidya.de or meinyogalehrer.de.